What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. As always, give us a five-star rating on Spotify and Apple where you find us. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Like, share, comment. We love the interaction. You can find us everywhere. X, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, at Tackles Pod. If you're on Facebook, search Between the Tackles. We're there. Again, all this goes a long way in helping us to continue to build this platform and build off our all the stuff that we've done this offseason. As always, I'm back with my pal, Manish. Manish, how are you doing on this fine Monday?
I'm doing great, and I'm especially excited to welcome Patriots columnist for MassLive.com. That's Karen Garigian, a friend of the pod. This is her second appearance on the podcast. Karen has covered Boston sports for about 40 years. Sorry to date you, Karen.
That's all right.
And you know, she's been covering the Patriots from the beginning of the dynasty with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, a respected voice on the most successful sports franchise, frankly, of this generation. You can find her work on MassLive.com. Follow her on X at KGarigian. I want to get into it. It's just another quiet off season on One Patriot Place, right, Karen?
Never a dull moment.
let's talk about the obvious story, the big story, the fallout of the New York Post Page Six story on Mike Vrabel and former NFL insider from The Athletic, Diana Russini. It's not only dominated the NFL headlines the past month or so, but really captivated people everywhere. And over the weekend, you wrote what I thought was an extremely thoughtful and balanced story from the perspective of Mike Vrabel's former teammates. These are Patriots legends, on how he and the team will navigate this over the next several months and heading into the season. You spoke to Patriot Hall of Famers like Rodney Harrison, Vince Wilfork, and Devin McCourty, among others. I thought, before we get into specifics, I thought you had one perfectly crafted sentence, no pun intended, that really encapsulated your story. And you wrote that Vrabel ignored the basic tenets of the culture that he had worked so hard to create. And I think, in a nutshell, that really, from a football perspective, is what this story is about. What are some of your bigger takeaways from talking to guys like Harrison, Wilfork, and McCourty?
Well, I went into the story kind of aiming to see both, how they, since they know him well, how he would respond and rebound from this football-wise, and also what it would be like in the locker room. They were former players, they have a coach preaching all this stuff and kind of skirting the, I said, tenets and principles of all the things he's laid out for them. So how does that wash, I think it was Rodney who basically said, I think most of them said, as long as Vrabel is honest in the room, as long as he, tells him he messed up in some way and don't do what I did because of all the reasons, I lay out to you not to do these things and to make good decisions. So as long as he's, upfront, I think they thought he would be okay because what happened to Mike is something that kind of happens to players in the locker room as well. Not necessarily with reporters, but the temptations and, those type of mistakes. And, they're not going to cast stones. But it is important for Mike to, again, be upfront, let them know what's going on, and then hopefully no more bombshells drop in the interim.
I think it was McCourty that told you that Vrabel really just needs to get to the season. Now, obviously, there's a wild card at play because Diana Russini has not spoken. You don't know if she's going to speak between now and the start of the regular season. And if so, what she would say, in addition to you know, as you just alluded to, maybe things come out of left field because it seemingly there's been a little drip every several days, something new coming to the forefront, whether it's pictures or stories from, you know, unnamed people that may have been aware of their relationship. And, you know, Burge and I have been pretty steadfast in not really diving into the personal element of it. I think that's between both families, but it does have a real impact on the football team. And I'm curious, what were your thoughts on McCourty's position that if he can get to the regular season, you know, week one kicks off, then people are really going to be concerned about who's up next? Who's the next opponent? Are they winning? How are they playing? How are they gelling? And this story really does take a back seat as opposed to right now. As you said in the story, if this had happened during the season, it'd be a much bigger and awkward situation even.
Yeah, if it happened during the season, it would have been much tougher to navigate. And we're there all the time. I mean, we would be there every day in the locker room, you know, talking about that as opposed to football, you know? So again, the distraction, put it this way, the distraction factor would multiply by a million if it, you know, if it happened during the season. So I think, you know, what McCourty said was pretty much right. If they get to the season, but what wasn't said was, well, he was, you know, get to the season, start winning football games, and everyone will put it in the rear view mirror. They won't if they start losing. Mm-hmm. Because the assumption will be that, you know, the coach was distracted, you know, taking care of this business. You know, the team, he wasn't focused. I mean, a million things will be piled on and the dots will be connected back to the New York Post story on April 7th. So along with getting to the season and winning, they, you know, winning is part of that formula.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the results of the season and how this is going to play out, because I think you're spot on, because if they start and they come out of the gate in September and they go 1-3, 0-4, like, and they don't look good, this is what everybody's going to come back to and point to as the reason why. And you're going to get all the questions about, well, what are the current players thinking about all of these, about what actually happened over the summer? Was anybody actually honest? And have you gotten any thoughts from the current players? I mean, we've heard some of them talk publicly, like Drake May and Christian Gonzalez, Robert Spillane.
Yeah, they're all, you know, they all have Vrabel's back right now. But the other part that I didn't mention about the start of the season is, you know, the Patriots, having been in the Super Bowl, having finished in first place in the AFC East, aren't getting the type of schedule they had last year. Mm-hmm. Last place. So not only do they have to win, but they have to do it playing in a, you know, all these first place teams, much tougher schedule, where, you know, I think people, you know, most of us, many of us who, you know, understand that maybe their record's not going to be 14-3, you know, this coming season. That's not to say that they're going to drop back to being 4-13, but I don't think there will be much forgiveness for a schedule, a tough schedule, you know, given, you know, the backstory or the cloud that's kind of hanging over their head.
Pressure's just mounting. The pressure just adds, it just adds to all of that. You know, we already knew they were going to be playing a much, much tougher schedule, so that, you know, you were going to see likely see some sort of regression from the record last year. And now you add this on top of it, the pressure's mounting.
Right.
Karen, you know better than anyone, so much of Mike Vrabel's ability to be a very good coach, or in Burge's eyes, an elite coach, is the energy, the juice that he brings every day in teaching. And you described in your story that, you know, since this news has come to light, he's been, I'm using your terminology here, Vrabel light. Can Mike Vrabel be a highly successful coach if this is the version we're going to see of him moving forward?
Yeah, it's tough to see that because, again, you know, I think McCourty kind of made a really good analogy in that Bill Belichick, you know, 6 Super Bowl wins, 20 years. You know, how did he keep, you know, the players in? Well, it was from his football genius and his X's and O's and strategy. You know, that's where the respect came from. That's where the relationship came from with the players and their buy-in with him being able to diagram ways or put them in positions to win. They respected that about him, you know, whether he was a tough coach, whether he was like their father figure and he wasn't, or, you know, what they respected was his football acumen. And I think while Vrabel is a very smart guy and a very smart coach, the thing that draws him to his players or gets them to buy him in is him. It's his personality. It's his, you know, having been a former player, they're relating to him and that energy that he brings. I mean, he's like Mr. Go-Getter. And I mean, they totally bought into the Vrabel way, which is totally different than the Belichick way. And if he's lesser than that, you know, the players might not, you know, it's just tough to see them being as willing, you know, going through the wall or doing the type of things that he elicited in his first year. Now, with time, again, that this is happening now, and Vrabel has time to sort things out in his personal life with his family, he, you know, gets to sort things out, again, assuming no more bombs hit, or who knows what Diana may or may not say. But with time, I think, you know, even a chastened Vrabel can get back up to the point, you know, that point of what he was as a coach in terms of the enthusiasm he brought to the table.
It's funny, you know, Burgett talked about current players and what, you know, what you think, you know, their response is going to be beyond the, you know, the handful of guys who have already spoken. What I thought was interesting in your story is that Rodney Harrison talked about the importance of empathy. And I think by and large people disagree with, you know, the actions from Vrabel and Russini. I don't think very many people would condone that. So I do think there is a place for empathy, but there seems to be, you know, a segment of people, and most of them, frankly, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I think they're Patriot fans, are extrapolating the empathy to, well, now Mike Vrabel's the victim because he's being followed around by TMZ in an airport. Take his wife off the table. I clearly think that's out of bounds and absurd and ridiculous. And the same would go for, all 4 kids in both families and both spouses. But for Vrabel specifically, there seems to be some people that believe that he's almost becoming a victim in this matter, which I don't think he is in any respect. But what are your thoughts about kind of towing that line between being empathetic toward a person who has made a mistake, because we've all made mistakes, and then going beyond that and kind of portraying him as a victim?
You lost me right there. He's not a victim, you know. He's responsible for his actions. And, you know, getting back to the locker room for a second, you know, there are, you know, just by the nature of how many guys are in the locker room, not everyone is going to have that forgiveness type of attitude. You know, there will be some who are impacted by that in terms of, you know, their opinion of Vrabel, you know, or their opinion of why am I going the extra mile for this guy, you know, because he said tells us one thing and he does something completely different. So I do think there will be some in the locker room who aren't as, you know, I love my coach, you know, the, you know, how Christian Gonzalez came out, how Drake May came out, you know, how Robert Spillane came out when we spoke to Robert Spillane last week. And those, I mean, that's where you, Mike has to worry about, you know, those players where he's lost an edge, you know? So, you know, as far as the public, you know, it's hard. People are going to have their opinions. And, you know, it's interesting at a couple of Patriot functions, season ticket holder functions.
Yeah.
He was almost like, it was almost like hero, I hate to say it, hero worship. I mean, he was roundly applauded, roundly supported. But I think it's because of, again, being followed around by TMZ, having his family exposed, and now it's like, you know, it's more like a poor Mike thing.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. I mean, you know, again, I do think there's space to understand that, you know, the guy made a mistake. Significant mistake. It's a significant mistake that will have ramifications that he has to deal with in his personal life. That, you know, that doesn't impact Karen, it doesn't impact Burge, it doesn't impact me. But I think you give people grace, you know, in those times, but you also have to talk about within the scope of football, how are people relating to him? I don't quite understand. Look, I mean, I'm sure I've rooted for people that have done some egregious things that I didn't even know that they committed. You know, I don't know. I just think that I thought that was an interesting dynamic, and I'm very glad that you brought up the Patriot season ticket holder event.
Which I thought, one on draft night and one last week.
And yeah, I thought it was really weird, to be honest, but that's just, you know, that's one person's opinion. I did want to talk to you about something that I think is very important. You are the longest tenured female Patriots reporter. And I mean, maybe I'm off on this, but I think I'm accurate. I think you're the longest tenured Patriots female reporter in the history of the franchise, from when they started to now. So
yeah, that's probably accurate.
Yeah, I want to get your thoughts. Again, personal matters are personal matters, but just through a journalistic lens, how do you think that, you know, Diana Rossini's reported actions with Mike Vrabel will impact how people, the public, view female sports reporters? Because so many reporters, so many females in this industry work exceedingly hard. They do it the right way. There are inherent obstacles to being successful as a female covering the NFL, you know, things that I wouldn't understand and wouldn't, frankly, have to confront. How do you think the public will view, you know, female reporters who excel at their job, given what they know about what happened with Diana Rossini?
Well, I think if it's a discerning public and an intelligent public, if, you know, people who have, you know, followed me for 40 years, or, you know, you would think you would kind of have an understanding or a feel for the female who's providing the information and what she's providing, and not, you know, lump everyone in this one pool, in the Diana Rossini pool. You know, unfortunately, there are people out there who love to jump in that pile and believe that, oh, this is how female reporters get their information, right? And it's just not true. And a lot of us are going through that, females are going through that right now. And, you know, it's mostly from trollers and and Twitter people who, you know, either want to get a rise or think they're being funny, or maybe they really believe it. I don't know.
It's a social media age. The social media age.
Yeah, it's what it is. But again, you know, I have to hope and believe that people who have followed me as long as they have, you know what I am, what I stand for, what I will and will not do for a story.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, I just think it's awful. And maybe some of it is trolling. Maybe some of it, like you said, it's, you know, prehistoric people who actually believe this nonsense. I wanted to get you just a quick tangent. I want to get your thoughts on a recent news story involving Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Cleveland Browns. She had reported last week that, you know, based on her information, Deshaun Watson had the inside track of being the Cleveland Browns' number one quarterback, I guess at least entering training camp. And then Shiloh Sanders, Shador Sanders' brother, came out and made some disparaging remarks about Mary Kay. Just what your reaction was to all of that?
Yeah, it's gross. I mean, it's awful. I mean, Mary Kay has been in the business maybe even longer than me, or as long, you know. And, but again, this is what we're up against now. You know, to give somebody an excuse to discredit, you know, legitimate news. You know, I feel bad for Mary Kay that you know that happened.
What kind of reaction?
I can't believe a current reporter, a current player, would do that. Like, that's like, for me, that yeah, I share the same opinion. Just disgusted by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I could tell you more stuff, but that's okay.
No, yeah. I mean, it's just, it's really unfortunate. You know, full disclosure, I've interacted with Diana Rossini throughout the years. I wouldn't say that we're friends, you know, acquaintances. And it really is unfortunate because I know so many women who have covered the NFL, who are still covering the NFL, who do such a good job. And I know, you know, based on conversations I've had with them throughout the years, just, you know, how challenging it can be and what the perception can be inside a locker room. And it just, you know, I don't want to say this one reporter's actions set it back, because everyone, you know, can make their own decisions and choices. And anyone who has ever interacted with you knows that obviously that would never happen. But I'm sad for a lot of these female reporters who, at least now in this immediate aftermath, have to now deal with, mm-hmm. How are you getting your information? Like, why are you so good at your job?
Yeah.
You must be doing something, you know, something untoward.
Why are you getting the first question?
There you go. I mean, that's, you know what? That's a great segue, because we had talked about the ESPN story.
Yeah,
right. Right. I mean, and Mike, and look, and I think you and I talked about this a few days ago, Karen. My big takeaway from that ESPN story, in which Mike Vrabel, when he was with the Tennessee Titans, asked AP reporter Teresa Walker to ask the first question in every press conference, and then when he came to the New England Patriots, he turns to you at the beginning of every press conference. And Mike, in that piece that was put together by Mike Reese of ESPN, made it clear that he understands and appreciates how difficult and challenging it is for female reporters in this industry. So again, I'm looking at this from afar. That was my main takeaway from the ESPN story. So to see and to hear and read about what has come to light since that has been very disappointing. I don't know how you feel, you know, in light of everything that's happened with Mike.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, basically, it's tarnished something that was a good thing, or perceived as a good thing. And I think it empowered women. I think women who weren't even journalists, it made them feel good that here's a male coach acknowledging how hard it is for women to basically break into a male dominated field. And it was his recognition of it and appreciation of it. And now it looks like something totally different. And I honestly, I mean, knowing Mike as long as I covered Mike as a player, and knowing him as long as I have, I thought him doing that was something genuine, and there was no ulterior motives, and there, you know, but again, now something that was good is being looked at completely differently, and that's really unfortunate.
Yeah, and I look, we're all complicated. I don't think any, you know, barring murderers, I don't think everyone's all good or all bad. I think there's, you know, layers to every person. So I do think, and I want to believe, and maybe I'm just being naive, but I want to believe, yeah, I genuinely want to believe that Mike Vrabel does firmly believe everything that he said in that story. I would be stunned if he didn't have an exceedingly high amount of respect for both Teresa Walker and you. I think there's a lot of merit to that. So I don't want to discredit everything that he has put in motion dating back to his time in Tennessee because of his relationship with this one reporter. Because I do believe that there's a lot of good in Mike Vrabel, and I'm not like Mike Vrabel's best buddy or anything like that. But I think that, you know, in this day and age, it's so easy just to lampoon somebody, you know, who makes a mistake to this level. And I am not on board with that. I've never been on board with that, both on social media. For example, last night, I believe, on ESPN, Inside the NBA, which is my favorite studio show with Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, Kenny Smith, and Ernie Johnson, those guys, at the every time a team gets eliminated from the playoffs, they have this funny little skit. It's called Gone Fishing. It's a Photoshopped image. And after the Celtics lost to the Sixers, there's a picture of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Bill Simmons is on the boat. And there's also a picture of Mike Vrabel with Diana Rossini. And I don't find that funny. And again, maybe I'm just a prude. I don't really know. I just think that, yeah, the guy made a big mistake. But to constantly pile on and make fun, I just think not only does that hurt him, I think it hurts his family. I think it hurts Diana Rossini and her family. And people that don't have space to understand that and don't view these people as actual human beings, to me, is a big problem on social media. It's a big problem in society. And I know I'm going on a soapbox, but I just wanted to get your thoughts because you know Mike much more than Burge and I know Mike. So what do you make of the lampooning, the jokes? What are your thoughts, you know, knowing the man personally?
Yeah, well, first off, it's like people will go back to, well, you reap what you sow, you know? But because of social media, because of the way society is now, everyone wants to pile on, you know? And again, that's just another unfortunate thing. But if you know Mike Vrabel and all the good he's done for charities, all the good he does behind the scenes and doesn't broadcast, I mean, he calls people out of who don't know him out of the blue to congratulate them for things, yeah. You know. And I mean, is he doing that for show? You don't know about these things, but, you know, I've sort of found out by accident some of the things that he's done on the down low and quiet. So, yeah, he made a huge, huge mistake, and he's paying the price. But again, is there a window how long does that have to last? You know, is TMZ going to be after him the rest of his life? Are they going to be stalking airports for his wife? You know, there has to be, you have to draw a line someplace, you know, but, you know, that's not what we've become, unfortunately.
It's almost like you need the next scandal to come for that to happen in the way it goes today. You need the next one to come for somebody else, and then they'll all be distracted by something else, and then this one will go again to the back burner.
Yeah, but right now this is the juicy one. So I guess Mike has to hope somebody else messes up somewhere.
Hopefully it's not one of his players.
I was just going to say that.
Bird, you got a question about Mike's potential future here?
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that he ends up resigning as the head coach of the Patriots? I have an opinion that I don't think that's going to happen unless, you know, there's some significant bombshell again that comes in the next couple of months. But
there's more in Pandora's box, right? Yeah, I agree. I can't see the Patriots, Robert Kraft, parting ways with him. I can't see him being fired, you know, over that type of indiscretion, let's say. But again, if this continues on if Mike feels that the distraction is hurting the football team, I think he would consider it. But again, we're not at that place. So
part of me thinks it would have, I don't want to say it would have already happened, but as they go deeper into the off season, it becomes a question of, like, now you're impacting more of the football operation as you get closer to training camp and the off season workouts. Outside of a bombshell coming out, like, I don't think there's any chance he's not the head coach of the Patriots next year.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I totally agree.
So, transitioning to football side of things here.
You mean the boring side?
Come on. Boring side, yeah. This is the juicy side for me because AJ Brown continues to be a hot topic for the Patriots and everything. Obviously, we know about the link with Diana Russini reporting on the compensation and basically anything to do with AJ Brown.
We have to go back to the gutter, right?
Yeah, all the way. You know, it's been that, but since then there have been other, you know, national reporters coming out reporting about how serious that this trade is going to come together in now less than a month. Do you think her reporting on this has had any, I don't want to say, maybe impact's not the right word, but I'm trying to think of the right word here, contribution to the discussions between the Patriots and the Eagles and how the compensation is going to play out?
Well, going back to the pre New York Post story, I mean, Diana had broken some stuff, but it was largely what everyone else had. You know, it's like, it's not like it was a secret about A.J. Brown and the Patriots or Mike Vrabel talking at the Combine, how much he loves A.J. Brown. I mean, you would never catch most coaches talking about other teams' players. But, you know, it's, and the Patriots never really denied that they would have interest, which is another unusual thing. But I don't really think that Diana's reporting was all that different than what was out there, at the time, you know, that, and now it's like, almost like, it seems like a fait accompli. So, you know, we'll see, but I'll tell you something. If it doesn't happen, there's a lot of egg on the Patriots' face.
massive, because when you look at the way that these moves have played out, you get the Eagles signing, Hollywood Brown, trading for Dontavian Wicks. You have them drafting Mekhi Lemon, and then you have the Patriots going the entire draft and not selecting a wide receiver.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's like, now if the Patriots don't do this trade, they're going to look bad.
And it's like, it's hard to know, like, who has the most leverage, because the Eagles definitely want to get rid of AJ Brown, whether they say so or not, they do. And the Patriots, before pre-scandal, definitely needed an AJ Brown type. Post-scandal, that's elevated twofold because they want, it's called a diversion, right? So you give the public, oh, this shiny new toy for Drake May, and all of a sudden the attention is on that as opposed to the ongoing scandal.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though it's essentially a handshake agreement, and depending on what report you believe, maybe there's nothing set in stone, and perhaps there is a little wiggle room for the Eagles to look for other suitors. I think by and large, you know, given what you guys just talked about, both teams, one team addressing the wide receiver position in the draft with the first round draft pick that they traded up for and another not. I think you're right, Karen. It is a fait accompli that A.J. Brown will be on the New England Patriots. I want to ask you, let's just operate under that assumption, because I think probably naive to not operate under that assumption at this point. How much does A.J. Brown elevate this offense? How much will he help Drake May? This is a player, depending on who you believe, maybe in decline. Maybe there's a part of the Eagles and Howie Roseman that believes that they're in decline. That's why they're even amenable to trading a player like him. And then there's some that think, hey, you know, he's not 30 yet. He's, what, 29, somewhere in that neighborhood. He's got a couple good years of electricity left in him. And he's clearly, with all due respect to Stephon Diggs, you know, at this stage of his career, he would clearly be the best player that Drake May has ever played for from a skill position standpoint.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, if you get two really good years out of A.J. Brown, that's a win. You know, if he's going to be injured, can't run, I mean, then obviously that's that's not what they're looking for. I think, I mean, even with his bad wheels and an offense that wasn't centered around him, he was still a 1,000-yard receiver. Again, he's better than any receiver they have. And, you know, they just haven't had that one guy who, you know, defenses have to pay attention to or game plan around. And you know, and if it's 90-95% of A.J. Brown, that's still a receiver you have to pay attention to. And his presence alone, again, now you have Romeo Doubs and you have Mac Hollins and you have, I don't know if they'll still have Kayshon Boutte, but the point is that you have your other receivers kind of slotted in their right places, going against defenders they should be going against, as opposed to, you know, up a notch. So, again, if you have a quarterback with the skill set of Drake May and you don't outfit him with good enough weapons, what are you doing? Bringing in A.J. Brown, again, it'll make at least the receiving core a little more legitimate. It'll put them among the better receiving cores in the league. And again, I think it kind of came to the roost in the Super Bowl. Obviously, protection was an issue, but their receivers can't get open against man coverage or against the better defenses or against the better secondaries. If you have A.J. Brown, at least you have someone who's going to get open.
Big improvement.
So, you know, it will help them without question.
Now, I got a question for you. We had talked, I remember the first time you were on, about Josh McDaniels. So Josh McDaniels, you know, the guy's a terrific offensive coordinator. He has had at least one exceptional wide receiver who he just did not get along with when he was the Broncos head coach. He ended up trading Brandon Marshall away. Brandon Marshall, to me, is one of the most talented players at the position over the last 20 years. A.J. Brown clearly is frustrated with the quarterback, specifically Jalen Hurts, but the offense in general. I think he's a team guy, while also being a guy who's very cognizant of his personal statistics. Now, he wants to win. I don't think that's, you know, I don't think he's selfish in that respect. But clearly, he believes he's a good enough player for the offense to go through him. And he does have a strong personality, even though it's a different type of personality than Brandon Marshall. And I know this was a long time ago. Josh McDaniels has grown and evolved as a head coach. How do you think the dynamic between McDaniels and A.J. Brown will be?
Well, I'm going to dial you back a year to when Stephon Diggs arrived. And myself included, there were many of us who were wondering how this was going to mesh. Because in the past, you know, Diggs has had a reputation for calling out coordinators, calling out the quarterbacks he's playing with, and kind of being a real diva if he doesn't get as many touches or looks as, you know, whatever. And even though people in Houston vowed that he was a changed man, you still kind of had that doubt, you know, that he would, I don't want to say change, but assimilate or check his ego at the door. I think the fact that there's a pre-existing relationship between Brown and Vrabel, and it's a good one, I think that will help matters. And I also kind of think, and again, I don't know A.J. Brown. I don't even think I've interviewed him at all. But my guess is, and coming off of all he's been spouting about the Eagles offense and the quarterback, I think he would come here wanting to prove that he was right and the Eagles were wrong for not focusing on or targeting him more or making him much more a focal point of the offense. He'll be in that I'll show him mode. And so I think at least initially he will be with the program. I think initially, and Josh McDaniels found a way to appease and satisfy Stephon Diggs every week. So obviously there's a little experience there with that type of mindset receiver. So I think initially, I think they'll be fine. If they start losing terribly, we'll see what happens then.
Anyone who wants to show up, Manish's Eagles is a friend of mine. 100%. 100%. I want to move on to a couple of the new players that the Patriots drafted. Mm-hmm. Before a couple questions on these. They trade up to 28 to get Caleb Lamu, the tackle from Utah. They already have a left tackle in Will Campbell, against my opinion, but that's a conversation for another day. Do you think, actually, you know what? We'll make the conversation now. Do you think that do you buy what the Patriots are putting down with Will Campbell and doubling down, saying he's the left tackle and that Lamu's going to be on the right side or a swing tackle next year? Do you buy that? Or do you think that at some point during next season, we're going to see Caleb Lamu as a left tackle for the Patriots? A guy who didn't give up a sack in his last year in college.
I think it all depends on Will Campbell. I think, you know, he had a decent enough regular season. He got hurt, injured a knee, and he was awful during the playoffs. I think they're giving him the benefit of the doubt. With a healthy knee, healthy everything, he had, you know, I talk to Dante Scarnecchia all the time, and there were technique issues that he needs fixed, okay? So if he, you know, during the off season and training camp, you know, does what they ask and becomes a better tackle, they're good. But I think it helps bringing in competition. There was no competition there last year. Campbell was the guy from jump, and it was obvious there was nobody pushing him, nobody that they were threatening him with if he gave up five sacks a game, you know? So now there's footsteps. And I think it was smart of the Patriots to draft not only one, but two tackles. And, I mean, Lomu projects on the left side. They say he can play the right. Well, He's a safety valve, basically. If Will Campbell can't get it together in year two. And they also have a right tackle, Morgan Moses, who's 35. And it was almost a miracle he was able to play every game. I mean, it's a credit to him. But you have to, you know, you have to factor those things in. They drafted another. I think they took a flyer on this mammoth tackle, Demetrius Crownover. His wingspan is like ridiculous, but he's a very raw product prospect, and they're going to have to do some work with him. But potentially, I mean, he could be the right tackle, and Lomo could be the left tackle, and you move Campbell inside. But at least now they have more depth, and they have, here's the word, possibilities. You know, if Campbell doesn't measure up, at least it looks like they have a backup plan.
Much better than last year. We can bring
a plan. I mean, it was like the starting five or bust.
gonna have to get on the phone with Dante Scarnecchia and see if he'll come back and coach him for a year and see how that works. I remember when he came back, I forget which year it was. It was 2014, what, 2015, 2016, one of those years. He came back and fixed everything in one year. It was incredible. But yeah, you're right. They getting the depth, having Elijah Vera Tucker come in to play guard as well, moving Wilson to center. I think their offense, I feel a lot better about their offensive line this season than this offseason than I did last offseason. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. On the other side of the ball, they used their second round pick on Gabe Akers, edge rusher, a position of desperate need for the Patriots. Do you see him playing as a day one starter coming in? I mean, I know they signed Draymond Jones and they lost Clavion Chaisson, so they're kind of like a swap out there. But an infusion of youth on the defensive front there, I think, is going to be a really good thing for the team going forward.
Yeah, I think he'll be probably rotational to start, and then we'll see how it goes. I mean, Harold Landry, their other edge rusher, had surgery in the offseason. He's not getting any younger. So, you know, the issue there was, and they let go of Anthony Jennings. I mean, they let go of people. So it was more like, well, who's gonna provide the pass rush? So I think Gabe Akers is an interesting prospect. He's basically the prototypical Mike Vrabel pick. I mean, he's violent. I mean, he's strong hands. He is endless motor. I mean, high energy guy. So we'll see that the skill set he showed in college translates to the NFL.
Karen, I just want to jump on something that Burgett asked a minute ago about Scarnecchia. Does he have any interest in even consulting in the summer? I mean, obviously Vrabel knows him, so why not just come, like, you know, during the summer months, work on some
what
stuff?
What he does, he actually works with the BC kids.
So he's in the area.
He is in the area. And, you know, BC is kind of like an offensive line factory, or has been. They always seem to have two or three prospects who you think will get drafted. But between the end of BC season and, like, through that whole process of the combine and draft and pro days, Scarnecchia actually coaches them up privately, you know, honing their technique, you know, trying to help them in, you know, showing what teams are looking for offensive linemen. So he has his hand in it that way. I think, you know, the Patriots situation is different. I mean, although some people think he's on speed dial. I don't know.
I would think, you know, as an outsider, I would just think you have a terrific resource who's in the area, evidently. Mm-hmm. Why not, you know, informally work with some of these guys, unless you're, you know, worried about stepping on egos for, you know, for other coaches?
Well, I think there's some of that. And I think, I mean, I think Scarnecchia respects Doug Marrone, you know, who is the offensive line coach or the head offensive line. It's funny, they have three offensive line coaches with, you know, Doug being the head. And I think, again, Scarnecchia, unless he's asked, you know, isn't gonna you know, butt his way in there. He's happily retired. He plays pickleball every day. He is the fittest guy, you know, 70 plus or whatever he is, 76, 77. I mean, run laps around all of us.
I got one final one, Karen. The Kayshon Booty situation, how do you think that resolves itself? It doesn't seem like there's really much room for him. What could they realistically get if they tried to move him?
Well, it's possible he would be part of the A.J. Brown package. So, and if, I mean, or maybe that's wishful thinking.
I think the Eagles room, the wide receiver room, seems to be full, but you never know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, you would have thought they would have traded him by now to get something, right? So, but you have two guys. You have Kayshon Booty and DeMario Douglas on the final year of their deals. Who's going to be the harder to sign? Kayshon Booty, because he had a semi-breakout year last year. Who knows what he's going to have this year? But, again, receivers go for top dollar if you can do anything, right? So I think the Patriots' thought was, again, they had to extract somebody. I'm just surprised it hasn't happened to this point.
Well, Karen, thanks so much for your time. Great insight, perspective. You know, there's never a dull moment, it seems, with the New England Patriots, right from the Super Bowl to whatever this wild offseason it was. We really appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I enjoy it.
And remember to check out all of Karen's work on masslive.com. We will link the story in our show notes, this most recent story about Patriots legends talking about Vrabel and how he can navigate over the next several months, what, you know, will be challenging, I think, for him at times. But it's a great story. Check it out. All of her great work on masslive.com. She's also on X at Kay Garigian. And she's around, you know, probably for another 40 years, covering the New England Patriots.
Right.
And that'll do it for this episode.
God help us.
Be sure to download, leave us a 5-star rating if you're enjoying the podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're also at TacklesPod on also other social platforms like TikTok, Instagram. We're also on Facebook. And of course, please comment. That goes a long way to helping us grow. And that'll do it for now. For Burge and Karen Garigian, I am Manish Mehta.